What's the biggest thing holding you back from a seven-figure recruitment business? It's not your market, and it's not your work ethic. It's actually the hidden roadblocks in your business that you don't even realize are there. That's why we created the Seven-Figure Freedom Scorecard. It's a free diagnostic tool that helps recruitment firm owners identify the biggest growth barriers standing in their way. In less than 10 minutes, you'll get a personalized report showing you exactly where you're strong and where you're struggling, and showing you the next steps to build a business that scales predictably without burning out. If you're ready to stop guessing and start growing, then take the free assessment now at recruitmentcoach.com/scorecard.
I think you can post great content, but if you're not doing outbound in addition to that content, I don't think you're going to get great results. You'll get visibility, and I think if you do it long enough, you'll get some results. But when you mix in great content, pain point content, focus on your customer, and then you do outbound as well, and you share that content, you're going to get good results, especially if you stay consistent with it.
During his 10-year career in staffing, Mike Mello made more than 1,300 placements. Yes, 1,300 placements, and sold over $100 million in revenue. Then, at the height of his career, he walked away to start something completely new.
So yeah, I loved it. You know, I was on the road, I was traveling the country, built my book up to almost 140 contractors, was the number two salesperson. And maybe I'm crazy, but yeah, I walked away to start SimpleSide AI. So
I'm Mark Whitby, and you're listening to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. My guest today is the founder of SimpleSide AI.
I had a lot of success with driving leads through LinkedIn. I started playing around with LinkedIn videos a couple of years ago. I was getting a lot of leads. Also having a lot of fun because I got a real chance to show who I was. And that attracted a lot of people with similar values and a similar type of person to me.
Before launching his business in 2025, Mike was a top-performing enterprise salesperson, building and managing a book of nearly 140 contractors. What changed was the sales environment. Phone-first outreach stopped producing the same results. Buyers were harder to reach. So Mike tried something different, something that wasn't in his company's sales playbook. He started posting videos on LinkedIn. His bosses hated it.
When I first started posting videos and posting on LinkedIn, I got a lot of ridicule from people that I respected too, and some people that I looked up to. And look, some of it was more lighthearted, like little jokes. Some of it was, why are you doing this? Why are you making videos? Why are you not sitting there cold calling for 4 hours?
But they couldn't argue with the results. Mike generated leads through LinkedIn video. He broke into a new enterprise account. And within a year, he grew that account to nearly 50 contractors.
And I showed one of my leaders the analytics one day, and their head almost popped off. I got 10,000 views on this LinkedIn video. It's 90 seconds. Look at who's watching it. And then I pulled up the analytics of my main customer. That was 10 or 11%. And the new account that I was breaking into, that was 8 or 9%. I said, I got 10,000 views on this, and 10% of them were from my main customer. That's 1,000 people. 1,000 people from my main customer just watched 90 seconds of the problems that I solve, how I help them, how I do it in a unique way.
In this episode, Mike explains how he uses a combination of LinkedIn video and automated outreach to drive real sales conversations. Why visibility now matters more than volume.
For anybody who's starting to post content or interested in it, look at the analytics of, if you're an enterprise rep, right? Do people at the enterprise account that you support, do they watch your videos, right? It's much more important to see who's watching it as opposed to see who is liking it.
And how recruiters can use those same principles to win business in today's market. All right, Mike, welcome. How are you?
Doing great, Mark. How are you? Thank you for having
me. Fantastic. Yeah, thanks for being here. I really, really appreciate it. I'm excited to learn from you. The things that you're expert in are things that I'm not expert in, but I'm very interested in and passionate about. And so, yeah, I'm excited to learn from you today. And so, by the way, how did we meet? I know that, I mean, I've been following you on LinkedIn because your content's great. So I came across you that way. And then you popped on my radar through Ben Mina. And then recently you were mentioned to me again by Greg Fisher, who has also been on the podcast. How do you know Greg, by the way?
So Greg had reached out to me months back specifically about my content, had some really good feedback. So we connected, gave him some overview of essentially what I do, learned about his services. So yeah, a lot of the folks that you mentioned, I've met them on LinkedIn. I've met them just through the world of staffing and recruiting.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Well, so look, before you launched SimpleSide, you were an extremely successful salesperson in the staffing business. You're based in New York, I believe. You made over 1,300 placements. You sold like $100 million in revenue. Like, I want to really get into like the content and the automation strategies, but I'd really love to hear your backstory. Would you talk me through that journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I started my staffing career in 2015. I was a couple of years out of the military, super raw, very unpolished. Started at a small firm. My cousin actually got me an interview, and I loved it. So the first couple months I worked as a recruiter, I was a mediocre recruiter. I was okay. I wasn't great at it. They moved me into sales, started selling at the enterprise level. Loved it, built some really good relationships, worked super hard. I did a lot of SOW work. So most of what I did was services. And when I meet with staffing founders now, I always tell them that some of the best business that you can get is more services, real contract work, right? Not the type of work that has very specific deliverables, but kind of in that middle ground of what is old school T&M staffing and new school services. So yeah, I loved it. You know, I was on the road, I was traveling the country, built my book up to almost 140 contractors, was the number two salesperson at the company that I work for after we got acquired. And maybe I'm crazy, but yeah, I walked away to start SimpleSide AI. So I had a lot of success with driving leads through LinkedIn. I started playing around with LinkedIn videos a couple of years ago. I was getting a lot of leads, also having a lot of fun because I got a real chance to show who I was. And that attracted a lot of people with similar values and a similar type of person to me. So yeah, I loved it. I did staffing for 10 years. And I was in the staffing game 5 months ago.
Wow. So like, this is still very recently that you launched this business. But it sounds like you were already using the stuff that you now provide to clients. You were doing that for yourself. And that, how did that, where did you get interested in that?
Yeah. So great question. So 2015, 2016, 2017, getting on the phone, making a bunch of calls, you know, sitting, working in a lobby at a client, running into clients, that worked for me. I drove a lot of business that way. Around 2019, and then after COVID, it became harder, right? I felt like it was harder for me to develop new business just on the phone. So one day I did a day in the life video of me going to a client, talking about all the pain points that we face, right? All the pain points that you're privy to. Hey, I interviewed this candidate and he used AI to cheat. I had this issue with trying to onboard someone. This is how I solved it. This is how we handled it. And it started just as for fun. Like I enjoyed it. I enjoyed sharing my day. And next thing I knew, I would have directors and VPs at my clients say, hey, like, we love your videos. Like, we're following what you're doing. And the first thing I thought was, oh, you love my videos, but you never like them. So that was kind of a revelation to me that hey, my end customers are watching my video. They're seeing what I'm doing. I'm talking about the pain points of my day, which essentially are the pain points of their day that I indirectly solve. And I started to get intros just through my videos. So I went all in on that. And I used that as a very specific strategy to help grow my book. I broke into another enterprise account in 2022. And I had grown that account to almost 50 contractors within the first year. And I did that through video. I did that through creating videos, talking about pain points, talking about the problems that I solve. So yeah, that was a somewhat of a light bulb moment for me. Because I said, oh, maybe I have something here, right? Maybe I have something that a lot of people aren't doing right here.
All right. Let's just press pause there for a second, because sure. I'd like to talk more about that. So when was this that you published that first video and then that kind of snowballed?
I think it was early 2024.
Okay. So yeah. Again, pretty recently. Man, you're like a rocket. You're just like, you've gone from here to here in like such a short space of time.
Cafe Bustelo.
Excellent. So leads via LinkedIn. This is a theme that I'd love. I'd like to explore further. It's something that we tell all of our clients. Like, it's one of the very first things we want them to do is start putting original content out there. Like, put yourself out there. Let people know, like, your expertise, your knowledge, your personality, and it has to be, of course, relevant to your audience as well. But what do you think stops people from doing that?
Fear of judgment, fear of criticism. Yeah. So look, I mean, I'll be very candid with you. When I first started posting videos and posting on LinkedIn, I got a lot of ridicule from people that I respected too, and some people that I looked up to. Yeah. And look, some of it was more lighthearted, like little jokes. Some of it was, why are you doing this? Why are you making videos? Why are you not sitting there cold calling for 4 hours? And I showed one of my leaders the analytics one day, and their head almost popped off. So I said, I got 10,000 views on this LinkedIn video. It's 90 seconds. And then I said, look at who's watching it. And then I pulled up the analytics of my main customer. That was 10 or 11%. And the new account that I was breaking into, that was 8 or 9%, right? So I said, I got 10,000 views on this, and 10% of them were from my main customer. That's 1,000 people. 1,000 people from my main customer just watched 90 seconds of the problems that I solve, how I help them, how I do it in a unique way. I'm also myself. And look, there might be some people that see my videos and say, this guy's got a little too much enthusiasm for me. And that's okay. So I'm actually filtering out people that I wouldn't get it. I probably wouldn't mesh with regardless. So the people that are watching the video and coming to me, they're getting a sense of who I am, what I do, how I help. So that was a moment where my leadership kind of looked at me and they said, oh, I think you have something here.
Brilliant. I love that. And I like that you just went ahead and did it anyway. And then, you know, you could show people that it was working rather than, you know, wait and ask for permission. But it's so true. Like, the visibility that you get compared, like, how many, can you imagine making 10,000 cold calls? It would be impossible, right? So, and yet you reach 10,000 people, including the very, like, target audience that you wanted to reach. So that is awesome. You also said something else that really resonated for me, which is that when you heard from customers that they were seeing your videos, but they hadn't engaged with it. So that's a really important point as well, because sometimes people get discouraged if they start posting on LinkedIn and they don't see, like, tons of engagement on there. And yet we've heard from our clients that when they actually call clients, then they get told, oh yeah, I see your content all the time. It's really good. But they never once gave it a like. What do you think's going on there?
It's strange. I think we're in a day and age where folks on LinkedIn feel if they like something or comment on something, then they are immediately going to get a message from that person who posted that specific piece of content. I think that makes them reluctant to engage with it. With that said, the goal of content is to create visibility on what you do. It who cares if someone likes it? I mean, yeah, that's lovely, and that, you know, it makes me feel good if I get a lot of likes, but the point of it is to showcase what I'm doing, how I help, and attract the right person. For anybody who's starting to post content or interested in it, look at the analytics of, if you're an enterprise rep, right? Do people at the enterprise account that you support, do they watch your videos, right? If you are targeting a specific city, right? Do folks in that city watch your videos? The same thing if you're within a specific niche, right? If you're trying to build a book of data analytics leaders, make sure those folks are watching it. It's much more important to see who's watching it as opposed to see who is liking it.
That's a great point. In fact, we'll give in the show notes, I can give a link to the shortcut of where you see your analytics in LinkedIn, because a lot of people don't even look at that, which I think is a mistake. And it doesn't have to just be videos, right? Any content, you can see the analytics of everything you post to make sure that is this reaching the right sort of people. So you started posting these videos and it was working, it was getting traction. What happened from there?
So I, two things happened. I had a couple folks ask me, hey, can you help me? Can you create some videos for me? Can you show me how to edit? Interestingly enough, most folks that I spoke with, they didn't know who their exact ICP was. And I told them, iron that out first. Iron who you're talking to, right? Think about your day. Think about the problems you solve. Who benefits from working with you? And then shape your content around that. So I helped a few folks with content. I helped a few folks with video. I started playing around with tools like Clay and some of the outbound automation tools right at the same time. I built a couple workflows for myself, booked a few meetings. Eventually, I had two or three people ask me, hey, can you do this for me? And I was like, yeah, sure. I think it was probably the third or fourth person that asked me. And I was like, hey, like I don't have the time for this. Like I have 135 people on billing. I just had a baby. I'm creating my own content. I'm helping these people. And this person said to me, well, how much would you charge? And the moment this person said that to me, I was like, oh, I have something that most people in staffing don't use and it's complex to do. So that was my quote unquote light bulb moment for,
great,
I think I have a business here.
All right. Awesome. And so, but you obviously had 130 contractors on billing. That must have been pretty tough to walk away from. Like, what was that conversation in your head?
Oh, yeah. It was, that was one of the toughest decisions.
Especially
of my
with
life.
The new baby, right?
Yeah, absolutely. My daughter, I think she was, my daughter just turned two. So she was about a year and a half. And look, I loved staffing. Like, I loved being a salesperson. And there, I'll tell you right now, there are days where I'm doing the invoices for SimpleSide and I'm thinking, man, I miss the days of just selling, just being out, running around, closing deals, negotiating. Staffing gave me a really good foundation and it gave me skills that I think most people don't have because staffing is tough. And I don't care what anyone tells you. Anyone who is successful in staffing, recruiting, selling services, they're tough, they're smart, and they're people who have fortitude. And ironically enough, those skills typically translate well for a small business owner. It was a very hard decision. I think I saw something that I know is going to take off, right? So whether it's a year from now or 2 years from now or 5 years from now, I believe that every staffing agency, every small and mid-sized staffing agency will have automated outbound and they'll have a specific content strategy that's not just marketing, but it's specific to their customer. And that's very different, right? I can look at someone's website and I can see marketing going out that is about interview content or staffing expertise. But what I believe is that these staffing firms are going to create pain point centered content for their buyers. So I believe I am starting something at a very good time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's only going to get bigger. So you're still at the beginning of this and you can be one of the leaders who are, you know, showing the way. So that's awesome. So what was the exact date that you started SimpleSide AI?
I quit my staffing sales job. I think it was June 14th. I was live a couple of weeks after that. I did the LLC. I did the website. It was 2 or 3 weeks after that that I was ready to rock.
All right. So we're talking like 8 months ago or so.
Yeah, even less, right? June, July, August, September, October, November. Yeah, I'm about 5 months in.
Wow. Okay. Jeez, I can't count today. That's okay. Awesome, man.
I mess it up too.
So I think what's interesting and unique about your approach is it's a fusion of LinkedIn content strategy plus outbound automation. And then so can you talk a little bit about that integrated approach and why you think these two parts need to go hand in hand?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'll give you the backstory too. Once I had a few folks ask me to help with their LinkedIn content and I had a few folks ask me to help with their outbound automation, just as a, you know, helping friends and someone said, hey, I'll pay you for it. Once I had that, I needed more data and I needed to see if there was real demand. So I went to about 50 people that I know who are either top salespeople or own small staffing agencies. And I said, if I did this, would you find value in it? What are one or two things in your area, in your team, that would help you get more leads, that would provide value, that would bring you a quick ROI. And I got great feedback on these services. So the reason that I believe that the LinkedIn and the outbound operate as one is because in this day and age, and Gartner just did a really good report on this, on how 70% of buyers already have their mind made up before they take the meeting with you. And that's a really big distinction that I think a lot of people haven't fully gripped yet. So when you create content, you're doing it to help your customer within the decision-making process, right? So when they come to your LinkedIn page, or if you're sending them your LinkedIn videos, which you should be doing, you are giving them an opportunity to see if you are a good fit for them. You're shortening the sales cycle. Now, some folks might disagree with me. I still believe you need to call. I still believe you need to follow up. I had a client recently bring in a really good project, and we were doing the outbound campaigns and the videos, and the prospect viewed his video 17 times before he took the meeting with him, right? So we get him on email 6-7, and he viewed a specific video 17 times. So you need to give so much context into why you are a good fit. And this isn't a hard pitch, right? This is why you should work with me. This is, hey, by the way, here's some of the problems that we're solving for specific customers. Here's how we're helping. Here's what makes us different. Here's data that we pulled that could be valuable to you. I want to share this with you. I made this video on LinkedIn. I wanted to share it with you as well. I believe they work as one because and look, some folks don't agree with me, but I think you can post great content, but if you're not doing outbound in addition to that content, I don't think you're going to get great results. You'll get visibility. And I think if you do it long enough, you'll get some results. But when you mix in great content, pain point content, focus on your customer, and then you do outbound as well, and you share that content, you're going to get good results, especially if you stay consistent with it.
100% agree. We're on this exact same page here. I think it's not either or. If, you know, it's not this debate of should I do content or should I do cold calling, or it's both. Like, why would you put any limitations on it? Because they actually work in concert. You know, the person's more likely to take your call if they've been watching your content, right? That's as simple as that. So you get a better response to your outbound by doing content. But then also, if you're doing content, but you're not actually reaching out to people, then you're leaving money on the table. Why wouldn't you do that? So can I ask you a question? You've used a couple times the term pain point content. What does that mean to you?
So, and I've looked at tons of data on this, and I made the mistake in month one of SimpleSide of writing a fair amount of the copy specific to ROI for my end customer. So let's say I'm working with a staffing firm that does all data analytics, right? I wrote a good amount of copy that was specific to, this is the ROI that you will get if you hire a great data analytics person. This is the ROI you'll get from working with our firm. When I tested that against pain, and pain is you're 10 minutes into the interview and you realize the person is cheating. They just wasted an hour of your morning because you rearranged your day to take that interview. You've hired the person for 2 weeks and now you realize after everything, they embellish their resume, right? That's pain. Pain resonates way more than ROI. Sometimes sales folks, we like ROI, right? Because that's how we look at business, as we should. But for a staffing firm, your end customer cares about the pain. So when I talk about pain points, I will sit down with an agency owner and I will say, we need to research the top 100 pain points in your niche. Also, you have industry expertise that GBT doesn't have. GBT does not know what you know. So we need to sit down and I need to understand all of the biggest problems that you've helped solve in the last year, right? Give me the nightmare stories from your customer and how you help that, or how you're planning to help that. And then we create content centered around that. Also, what's doing really well, unscripted content, right? So anyone who, and I've looked at this across multiple founders now, the people who actually do really well with content are not people who are extremely polished and don't say right or don't say They're just human beings and they're somewhat imperfect and they tell that story. That type of content does really well. And to your point, it does very well when it's focused on the pain of the end customer.
Love it. This is great. I like the unscripted content idea because AI video is getting so good, right? And I'd like to get your opinion on this because some of our customers come like say, hey, Mark, should I just like there's services already offering, like they'll create video clones of you, and then you don't have to look at the camera and you don't have to worry about, you know, saying and ah, and you like, because that's what puts people off, I think, from doing video as well. Not just the ridicule, but they're like, they're worried about their camera presence if they're, you know, they won't come across as well or whatever. And they think, oh, I'll just write these scripts and then the AI will deliver the content for me. And I personally think that's a mistake, because what's missing in this equation, like, so we're in a low trust world, right? Where it's, and with the rise of AI, that's accelerating. Like, people don't trust, they're skeptical. And I think being an authentic human and making mistakes and saying, we all have little filler words we use. I say, what do I say? Okay. I say the word okay, like way too many times, right? But the thing is, then they're seeing the real me, and they know that it's an actual human being. It's not a bot. But what's your take on it?
I could agree more. What builds goodwill? Right. So anyone who works as a staffing salesperson, do you know what the worst thing you can ever hear from a customer is? Man, you're a great salesperson. It's the worst thing. If they say that to you, you're not closing the deal. Why is that? Because the great salesperson is so polished. He or she is so articulate. No, you want to be a human being. That's what resonates. That's what builds trust. It's very hard to measure something that's better or worse, right? Better or worse is very subjective. But one thing that is clear is different. And I want more AI content out there, right? I want my competitors to do it, because when you go on camera and you just tell your story and you are your imperfect self, the person who views it is also imperfect. And that is how you create real goodwill. That's how you create trust, in my opinion.
Yeah, great point. So, and can I just clarify, this is turning into a little bit of a video marketing session, but that's okay. When you say unscripted content, like, I'm assuming you mean literally just don't read off a script, right? Like, but you should still know what your talking points are, like have thought through what's the main point I want to get across in this video, or what are my two or three kind of key points that I want to get across? How do you suggest people prepare for that sort of video?
Three things. So think about the pain points of your customer, think about where they are, and think about the specific niche, right? So let's say you're trying to get more data analytics business in Boston for mid-market companies between 200 and 1,000 employees. Have one note that is the pain points, right? Have one note about what makes Boston unique and Boston different, right? And just talking about that and sharing it, people will associate you with Boston. Most people associate me with New York City, because for the last couple of years, I post videos of me running around New York City. And what was the last one? Pain points, location, and then specifics to the niche, right? Your expertise in that niche. Just to keep it simple, right? Just start there. Like, that's the easiest way. I personally do like incorporating personal things into content. I think that is important. I think, one, you want people to know who you are, and you want people to know what you value, and you will attract like-minded people. All of the clients that I have, they are very similar to me. Most of them own a small, you know, a small, medium-sized business. Many of them have small children, right? Like, many of them have similar values. And I believe that's because I've been so direct with who I am that people know pretty quick, okay, I'd probably work well with this person. Or they might say, no, I wouldn't work well.
Which is fine because probably they wouldn't have bought from you. Here's the thing, like, if your content is very vanilla because you're worried about, you don't want to offend anyone, or you don't want to like turn anyone off who's different to you, and so you just stay very safe in that box, then you're not going to attract anybody, right?
Exactly.
You want to be, you know, put yourself out there and bring your own personal, you know, values, your life, your, you know, your kids, your hobbies into your content, because the people who don't resonate with you, you're probably never going to sell to them anyway. But what it will do is magnetize the right people who are your sort of people that are more likely to do business with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like, in the long term, it's a win-win. You know, like I take the day off for my kid's birthday, and I'll tell my clients like, hey, I'm off today. Like, it's my daughter's birthday. The clients who have similar values are like, hey, hope you guys have fun. Eat some pizza, right? So you want to think about it long term, right? And yeah, I think that sharing a bit of your personal life, I'm a big advocate of that, right? It doesn't have to be over the top. I also want to make the point, to your point, you also have to be against something.
And aha, and, okay, say more about that.
Right, so I'll give you a very specific example. I am never going to work with staffing firms that are $500 million plus, $1 billion plus. I have those relationships. I could push hard enough and I could get those meetings and I could most likely get that business. I'm never going to do that because I don't want that business. It's not how I want a service, and it's not what I want my brand tied to. I don't personally want to work with staffing firms that offshore all of their people. That's not my, those are not my values. I want to work with staffing firms that are grinding, are hustling, have great salespeople, have dedicated, enthusiastic salespeople. That put their clients on a pedestal, that treat candidates great. So I am very specifically branded and focused on helping small and mid-sized staffing firms, right? So that's just one example, right, of how somebody who maybe is thinking about content, how they could brand themselves.
Okay, love it. And have you read StoryBrand by Donald Miller?
No, I haven't.
Oh, put it in our list. I think you'd like it, okay. Mike. Yeah. So essentially it talks about the structure of every great best-selling book or movie, whether it's like Harry Potter or Star Wars or, you know, whatever, they all have the same structure basically. And that human beings are wired to listen to stories, and that if you want to influence people, then, you know, if you can tell it as a story, then it's gonna capture their attention. And the idea is that you're not the hero in the story, though. It's your customer is the hero, okay? And you are the advisor. So you're like Yoda or, you know, Dumbledore or whatever, who is guiding the hero in order to go on their quest and like slay the dragon or defeat Voldemort or whatever, right? So, but then there has to be an enemy in this story. And that's the thing that you mentioned that you're against. So that, like, who is the hero's enemy? And, you know, how does your solution, your magic wand, your elixir, help them to defeat the enemy and then complete the, you know, the quest kind of thing? That's the idea behind it.
Yeah, but, I got to read that. It sounds great.
Yeah. So you said something a second ago about... So we're talking about pain point content, unscripted content. What's the frequency that you want your clients posting on LinkedIn?
So anybody who's new, it should be at least once or twice a week, right? So you don't need to post 5 times a day. You can if you want to expedite your growth, but if you're posting 1 to 2 times a day, I like video content personally.
A day or a week?
A week. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Yep, okay. Yep. Thank you. Yeah, that'd be a little over the top. 1 to 2 times a week is really good. I always recommend video to me is the best way because people see you and they hear you. And I think there is, I think that's invaluable in the long term. Written content still does well. Like even when I look at the analytics for a lot of our clients, the written content actually gets more reach. But one thing I always share with my clients is, yeah, the reach is great, but we want trust, right? And your face, you talking, how you carry yourself, video goes a very long way.
That's awesome. Reach versus trust. I hadn't thought of it that way before. I had Richard Vanderblom on the podcast a few months ago. He publishes an annual LinkedIn algorithm update. And he was, and so they look at literally hundreds of thousands of posts and analyze what performed well and what didn't. And video is definitely still the, you know, the big play that, so if people are sitting on the sidelines thinking, no, I'm not comfortable. I'm just going to I'll post some pictures and some text and maybe do some polls, maybe a carousel. That's all great. But like, let's just get outside your comfort zone and put yourself out there. You know, as you said, like, see your face, hear your voice. I love the idea of reach versus trust, because that's the way to accelerate trust, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that, like, to me, and look, some of the AI and automation folks push back on me for that, for this. I believe staffing is still about relationships, and I believe that's not going anywhere. I actually think relationships are going to be even more important in the day of AI and automation and content, because there's going to be so many voices, right? So I always tell people, when you think about outbound and you think about content, the whole point is to help you build a relationship. Does your content build better rapport with the customers that you have? When you post something and you post something of value, the person who watches that will forever associate you with the value that you provided them, whether they're your customer or not. It doesn't matter. So to me, the content, the outbound automation, it's a vehicle to get more relationships. I'm sure we will, but I would love to talk a little bit about Clay too, right? And some of the enrichments, because you should be pulling people into your ecosystem that you have a high probability to get along with and have similar values to you. And you can do that through certain ways now with Clay. So
let's shift from content. So just to be clear, when you're working with customers, what is the order of operations here? So like, you can't literally do everything all at once, right? So what, obviously starting with the ICP, that's the same with us. Like, until you nail that, you can't do any other stuff. So you get them really clear on their ICP. We call it ideal client avatar. What are the pain points? What are they trying to achieve, and so on? Do you go to content next and then automation, or what's the correct sequence?
Great question. So we talk about ICP. We also talk about the specific goal of the agency, right? So some companies, they want to get more accounts. Some companies, they want to get deeper into the accounts that they have. Some companies want more services business. Some companies want increased brand and authority with their customer base. So it's helpful when I understand that, because then I can pull data based on those specific variables. From there, once we have a clear idea, hey, this is your exact ICP, then this is also someone that will give you money, right? Highest probability to actually give you money and use your services. Great. Now the goal is to get more mid-market business targeting this specific ICP, right? From there, next step is data enrichment, right? So I use Clay. I love Clay. I used everything. I used ZoomInfo as a sales rep, Discover.org. I used Apollo. Clay to me is one of the most accurate data enrichment tools. I have no partnerships with Clay, just for your audience. They don't pay me a dollar to say that.
I agree, by the way. I think it replaces all those other tools that you just mentioned.
Yes. Yeah. And I love it. I use it to market SimpleSide. I used it for a short period of time when I was in staffing. And I implement it into the workflows for all of my clients now. So Clay, you can do enrichments based on different triggers, right? So a company that just got VC funding, right? A company that's going through a merger. Me, I like to keep it as simple as possible. I like to target a location where the staffing agency can go meet people in person. That's really important to me, right? And ironically enough, right? Even if we target folks who were in a specific state, let's say I work with a staffing agency in, I don't know, Atlanta, Georgia. If we target people who are from Atlanta, Georgia, and then they move elsewhere, there's a higher probability that you're going to get along with that person if you grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and so did they, and they're now in San Diego. And these are just these little nuances of how do you increase the probability of being able to build a really good relationship with your end customers. I got married in June. So that's a great month. Huh? I quit my job, started SimpleSide, and got married in June. I had a bunch of my customers there. My customers on the staffing side, right? So my folks I sold to when I was a staffing salesperson, I'm going to be close with them forever, because they are such similar people to me. We share the same values, right? And it was very intentional. I was intentional of getting time with them, because I knew that once I did, I enjoy being with them, right? And those are the customers you're going to service really well. And those are the customers you're going to have a great partnership with. So I always tell staffing agencies now, target people that will want to be around you and that you'll want to be around too, because you can't fake that, right? I don't care what anybody says. If you're working with somebody and you have different values and you're different people, you can't pretend that you like them. You really want to find people that you can mesh with and build a partnership with.
That makes sense. So, okay. And great tip, by the way, targeting people either living in a city where you can go and see people in person, but also if they're originally from there, you have that thing in common. So that's great. So you're actually doing the market mapping and clay next. That's and looking for those signals.
Yes. So again, step one, I'd like to keep it as simple as possible. We will either target a specific account, right? If they want to break into an account, or we will target a specific city, right? So if it's Nashville or Houston, I'll pull companies that have received funding within the last 24 months, and I'll make the copy specific to that. I'll pull companies that have had open jobs within the specific.
Listen, having a ChatGPT license for your team is great, but it is not enough. ChatGPT requires you to stop what you're doing, switch windows, copy information, and ask it to do something. AI agents are different. They're built into your workflow and they take action automatically. Recruiter Flow is an AI-first ATS and CRM with built-in AI agents working for you around the clock. Their encoding agent structures your data. Their job change alert agent monitors your database for opportunities. Their note-taking agent captures conversations and updates your CRM. This isn't about working harder. It's about letting AI handle the busy work so you can focus on relationships. To see it in action, go to recruitmentcoach.com/recruiterflow. Most recruiters try to convince new clients they're credible on the call, but the best time to establish trust is long before the sales call even starts. That's exactly why we've launched a new service here at Recruitment Coach called Trusted Voice Video. In just 30 minutes a month, we help you to create 30 days of professional video content. No scripts, no awkward performances. You simply show up for a guided conversation around topics you already know inside out. We'll tell you exactly what to talk about, what equipment you need, and help you feel confident on camera. We'll make sure you look and sound great, even if you hate seeing or hearing yourself on video. And we handle everything else. You'll get to work directly with my colleague Sanjay. He's the guy who produces this podcast you're listening to right now, as well as my own LinkedIn videos. If you want clients showing up already pre-sold on working with you, book a free video content strategy call at recruitmentcoach.com/video.
Specific niche they support, right? So we'll target them that way.
All right. Love it. And what comes next?
Posting content, right? So content calls, posting content, sharing the content, building out the outbound automations. Where we see a lot of success is email 6, 7, 8, right? This is a good tip for your audience. For anyone in your audience that they're building outbound campaigns, one of the best things you can do, share your videos, right? And don't ask for anything, right? Hey, I made this video on these challenges that are happening in San Antonio, Texas, as a mid-market leader, leading a team of data analytics engineers. I thought you might find this valuable. Put that into your sequence and you'll get great results. Most of the tools now, you can track all the clicks, right? So you can, you know, tools like Smart Lead, tools like Instantly AI, LinkedIn automation tools such as Expandy, such as HeyReach, right? You can track who's actually clicking on the videos. Please.
Yeah. No, go on. I'll ask. Yeah, I've got follow-up questions. That's okay. Go for it. Yeah.
I'm long-winded today.
Go for it. I'm enjoying it.
Thank you. So from there, once the outbound automations are set up, right, that's where we start to try to book meetings. Where we have the most success, right, and this is why I'm a big proponent of the phone still works, right? The video, the outbound, it's a vehicle, it's an engine to get you more meetings, but the phone is still a very useful tool. We'll have the reps call, right? So the staffing agency that I'm working with, the sales reps will call and follow up and say, hey, I sent you a video on this specific topic. Thanks for taking a second to watch it. you know, when the time is right, would love to meet with you. The probability that you book a meeting with them when you put in all that work up front goes through the roof, right? And it's it'll make your life a lot easier.
Okay, I love it. So, two questions about the email sequence. And by the way, so my tech stack is Instantly for email. I tried SmartLead, but I find Instantly easier to use, more like from a user experience point of view. HeyReach, I've got jury's out on HeyReach. I don't want to get too deep on techie stuff here. So how, over what time frame are these 7 or 8 emails going out?
12 weeks. Yeah, the data that we've seen so far of what's working best is a 12-week campaign. Emails, you know, seven to nine emails, right? And then a combination of LinkedIn as well. So usually a 3 to 6 sequence for LinkedIn, right? And that will include sharing some of the videos of sharing some of the specific content the rep created or the founder.
Okay, fantastic. So it's interesting because I was always kind of aiming for 3 to 5 emails in a sequence, but mind you, yours is over a longer period of time. But then I've noticed some clay, kind of like the big gurus on clay, saying that you should only now send a couple of emails because your response rate drops precipitously after the first email. It starts going down. And then by email 3 to 4 to 5, it's so small. Also, the more emails are in a sequence, the fewer prospects you can reach out to at once, right? Because you've got limits, depending on what your infrastructure is, you've got limits of how many emails you can physically send out in a day. But my interpretation of that is, I'm wondering if they're dealing with such large TAMs, like if you're targeting 10, 20, 30, 100,000 companies, then it makes sense to only send 2 emails per prospect, but to be able to reach more prospects. But I'm guessing if you have a smaller target audience, you have to work it more intensively. Is that your rationale, or what's your rationale for doing 7 to 9 emails?
Yeah. So let me ask you this: those clay gurus, are they specific to staffing, or are they?
No, exactly. Okay. No, they're not. They've got agencies with enterprise clients.
Yeah. So I think this is a really important distinction to make. So everything I've looked at for Clay is very popular on the startup and the software side, right? So a lot of my friends that work at startups and sell software, I think that's a different game than staffing. I think with how staffing is, there's a lot of competition. There are many staffing firms that do nothing to make themselves differently. I'm sure you get the messages. I actually just got a cold call yesterday. Hey, do you have a Java developer opening, right? So with that said, I think you need more emails in staffing and you need more outreach. And often content is actually super helpful because it helps the buyer and the decision maker understand if you could even help them in the first place. So I think staffing's harder. I think there's more competition. And I can tell you, I've never booked a meeting for a client in less than 3 emails.
Like, excellent. Interesting.
You need to follow up because they're getting messages, right? So you need to add so much value, and your copy needs to be specific to their city, their pain point, what makes you different. So everything I've seen, you need the volume.
Okay, so like more persistence over a longer period of time. Yeah, that makes sense. And when you say you're sharing your videos and is that via email or is that via LinkedIn?
Both.
Interesting.
Yeah. So on, we do it right on SmartLead for email. Right. So let's say the first couple emails are, talking about pain points, right? So, I recently did a presentation. I had mentioned this too. So a very good email, it usually is formatted in the context of an observation, a problem, a solution, and a call to action, right? So if for anyone in your audience who's just starting out with cold email, or you're writing the emails yourself, that's a really good framework. Hey, I noticed this. Hey, there was a cyber attack. Hey, this happened to your company. Observation. problem. This often leads to compliance issues. This often leads to specific pain. Solution. This is how we help call to action. Would you like to book time with me? Right.
So it's a great structure. So observation, yeah. Problem, solution, CTA.
That's it. Yep. Great. So yeah, for the videos, we put them right in Smartly. So usually on email 2 or 3, we'll say, hey, created this quick video, thought you might find it valuable. Here's a quick little blurb about the video. And this is helpful too, because we can track who opens it, right? So again, anybody who's thinking about doing outbound automation, you want to make sure you can see who's watching the videos. From a LinkedIn perspective, we will often follow up via LinkedIn and then message 2 or 3, share one of the posts, right? Hey, I posted this about the recent H-1B bill that was passed, right? As a leader in your market, I'm sure this is going to impact you. Thought you might find it helpful. It's goodwill. We're playing the long game here, right? This isn't meet with me, this is why. It's a long strategy. It's building goodwill. And it's, again, showing your customer how you can help them before you even ask for the meeting.
Love it. This is brilliant. Now, I like this strategy because my mindset is very much like lead with value. Don't just sell, but also should demonstrate expertise, give insight. But I worked with a Clay agency and they were like, no, you can't put links in the email because it'll hurt your delivery. So there can be 0 links in your email. What's your take on that?
From what I've seen in SmartLead, multiple links, right? So I ran into this problem month 1 where I was doing outbound for a client and I said, man, these open rates are super low. Something's not right here. It's because we had too many links in his signature. So we had his LinkedIn, the website, the video. From my experience, putting 1 or 2 links in, we've had no issues, right? And I know that because I can see who actually clicks the video and watches it.
Yeah. No, that's good. I'm glad to hear that because my instinct is I want to provide more value and give them a link to a video or something. I was told that is going to kill your delivery and cause you problems.
How many emails are you sending? Maybe it's because of the link and the volume.
Yeah, we're not sending. We get good delivery, by the way. So it's not. But what I want to test after talking to you is starting to use links again in our emails. There's something else I was going to ask. How are you tracking people watching the video?
Right on SmartLead. Yeah, right on SmartLead. So, This is a good tactical framework, right? So, and this will be good for anybody who's thinking about doing this on their own. Let's say you use Instantly AI. Let's say you use SmartLead. Let's say you want to get 50 to 75 emails out every day. One of the best things you can do is get your 50 to 75 emails out, set a follow-up using a HeyReach, using an Expandy for LinkedIn, track who opens the videos on SmartLead. You can also track who just opens the email as well. In my opinion, that's a warm lead. And then if you're a staffing founder doing this, have reps call, right? So at the end of each week, hey, Mark here, my founder has sent you a video on this specific initiative that we're helping. Thanks for taking a second to watch it. If there's interest, you know, we would love to set up time with you. Nice and light too, right? So the hard call to actions in staffing, they don't work. You turn people off and you hurt yourself long-term. Keep it light, keep it short. But that's a really good structure. Emails, outbound automation, and then calls.
Love it. That's brilliant. CTAs, let's talk about that because the most common one is a more hard call to action. Like, you know, would it make sense for us to have 15 minutes and I can, you know, find out more about your company and tell you how we can help? Something like that, right?
Please.
And yeah, exactly. I just feel like that's been done to death and people are busy and they don't want to give you 15 minutes when they don't really see how it's going to benefit them. So what have you found to be the most effective CTA for like a cold outbound campaign?
For one client, we built a prompt and the prompt was specific to the city that he was in. It was specific to job changes in that city. And that city is undergoing a large transformation with big companies coming in and essentially changing the ecosystem of this mid-market city. So we did an outbound campaign where we said, hey, we built this prompt. This is exactly what it tracks. And I say directly, as a way to build goodwill, because that's our intention, right? I'm not just doing it to share it because I have the free time. We're doing it as a way to build long-term goodwill. So, you know, hey, as a way to build long-term goodwill, would love to share it with you if you're interested, right? We got very good responses off of that. And most of the time, we'll send the prompt. We won't ask for the meeting right after that. And then in 3 days, in 4 days, we'll say, hey, by the way, congratulations on the $33 million of funding you received 18 months ago. I noticed you had these four jobs. We just helped this company with a very similar project. I have some great folks, would love to share them with you. That is a much easier way to sell today than, hey, Mike Mello here, I have a Java developer.
Awesome. Love it. And so essentially that initial email is offering what I would call lead magnet, right? It's something that is a piece of value that you're giving for free to get people to say, yeah, I'd like to see that. And it's an easier first intermediate. You don't want to try and sell your service in a cold email when they have no idea who you are. That's a big leap for someone to make, right? You need to baby step it. So what's an intermediary step where they can, you know, it's easier for them to say yes. It's not as big of a commitment, but it still allows you to start building the relationship. So I love that idea. Are there any other things that you've used for that, like initial value creation?
Videos. So for some prospects, I'll give you a specific one for past accounts, right? I have a client where we were targeting all past accounts. We took little bites of what they did years back with that past account. So for many staffing agency owners, you had an account in 2021, it was going well, 2022, it was going great, 2023 came, 24, those accounts dried up. So one thing we've done to revamp accounts is we will use success, right? Past success. And we'll do an outbound campaign with that specific success, right? And that's good too, because when the prospect gets that email, they know you've done your research, right? And you've already supported the account and you're speaking directly to them. Mark, I want to make one point on what you said before too. One thing that, and I know because I made this mistake my first couple of years in staffing, you are not trying to sell your solution. You are trying to sell the solution. So the people in staffing who are crushing it, they are not saying, this is why we're the best staffing agency. This is why we have the best services. This is why my recruiters are the best. They are convincing the end customer that they need, that there's a problem and that they need a solution. So even many of the customers I work with now, they've gotten in front of folks. And then halfway through the conversation, the staffing agency says, hey, by the way, you really should have a contractor in this position based on the deadlines, based on the risk, based on all these multiple variables. We think a contractor would be better, and this is what that looks like. And that's how you really start to build good trust. And that's where you leverage yourself as a real expert and a consultant, as opposed to someone just sending out resumes.
Yes. No, that's a great distinction. You're not selling your solution. You're selling the solution to the customer's problem. I 100% agree with that. Fantastic, Mike. So tell me, the clients, so you've been doing this for 5 months now, and you have clients who are seeing results really, really quickly. Think 80-20 rule here. What's the 20% that drives the biggest results for people?
Well, that's a great question. So there's 2 points I want to make to that. For anybody who's thinking about content and outbound, I do want to preface, this is a long-term game. Where we get the best results for our clients, where we really start to see inbound traffic, is month 3 and month 4. So it takes some time, right? And you know, that's super important, because this is not something where in month 1, you're going to get 5 new agreements, right? Month 3, month 4, you start to see the traction. And then you build the goodwill from there. And then now you have new accounts, right? You've broken into new accounts. You're in a really good position. The biggest distinction is great salespeople, right? And look, I had somebody months ago tell me, hey, I'm thinking about your service and I'm also considering hiring a really good salesperson. And I was like, you better hire that salesperson, because a great salesperson is 10 times more valuable than any content, than any outbound, right? A great salesperson to help push your business. So the companies that we do really well with, either the founder themselves has great sales skills, they have very specific expertise within their niche, or the salesperson has a fire in his or her belly, right? And
that is such a good point.
Yeah, that's where we've seen the best results.
It's so interesting because, like, so I can think of an example of someone that we worked with for a brief period of time. Lovely person, really liked her on a personal level. Her content was fantastic. Like, on LinkedIn, she was very visible. She, you know, she did put out videos. She put out, you know, just really good solid content. But she wasn't doing deals. And we're really trying to analyze what's missing here. What's like, why isn't she making money? Because she is, it looks like she's doing everything right. And what we eventually figured out is she didn't know how to sell. And so the foundation was completely missing. So you can do all this other stuff on top, but if the foundation isn't, like, you're able to talk to prospects, uncover their problems, and then propose the solution, and then none of the other stuff matters.
Bullseye. Yeah. So content, outbound, it's a way to get you in front of more people, right? And it's a way to bring in people that have a high probability of getting value from the service that you offer. With that said, if you don't have the actual sales acumen, it doesn't matter. And I get so many messages from sales folks coming up. I'm very active on TikTok. So the generation before me, I get messages every day from folks on TikTok, on LinkedIn. Hey, how can I be a better staffing salesperson? I'm a year in, I'm 2 years in. The first thing I tell them is read Never Split the Difference. Read How to Win Friends and Influence People. Read 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. When you're year 3, 4, 5, read The Challenger Sale. Do all of that before you think about AI or automation or anything, because the actual sales acumen will pay you a much higher dividend long term.
That's brilliant. I love it. You've said something about building SimpliSide AI in public. And can you say, first of all, what does that mean? And then why have you decided to do it that way?
Great question. So I have learned so much with SimpliSide AI, right? And I'm a staffing person. I'm not an AI guy. I'm a staffing person that understands content and understands a fair amount about automation. I want people to see some of the highs, some of the lows of SimpliSide AI, and I have tons of content stored and I'm ready to share. My goal is that someone can look at my LinkedIn, see the story of SimpliSide AI, and get some value out of it, and therefore associate SimpliSide AI with that value. The overwhelming majority of people that ping me on TikTok and say, hey, your video helped me, or thanks for sharing that mistake you made with this email domain, I learned a lot. The majority of them will never buy the SimpliSide service, and that's okay. But I want to have a good impact on the staffing industry because I had some great mentors coming up. Like I had, you know, you hear a lot of people with nightmare stories about bad bosses. I've never had one bad boss in staffing. Not one. Every single leader I ever had was very good to me. So building in public, sharing the mistakes, sharing the highs, sharing the lows, it's a way for me to give something back and essentially build that brand around SimpliSide.
100%. I also think it is going to engender trust, right? Because when you're being transparent like that, then automatically you're not hiding anything. And so people are going to warm to you. The other word you use a lot today, which I like, is goodwill. What does goodwill mean to you? Because it's a sort of difficult concept to wrap your arms around.
Goodwill to me is building rapport with someone and not expecting anything out of it. So to me, goodwill is, let me do something that builds some trust, builds some rapport. Look, if you do that for a year and you expect nothing, you'll get a dividend on it. It'll come in 2, 3, 4 years. But I think the days of being pushy, I think the days of, right, the highest producer years back was the person who was the best on the phone, the person who could close, the person who was direct, is very different now. So I think when someone takes a goodwill approach and thinks, hey, how can I help here? I'll give you a very specific example. I have one or two customers that rolled off that they'll ping me sometimes and say, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? I answer them every single time. Hey, this is how you should go about that. Here's a list that I can pull for you and Clay, right? It's the long-term approach as opposed to this transactional, you have a placement, I have a service, you have a deal, let's do it. It's a long-term mindset.
I love that. That's probably a good place to finish, Mike. We could keep talking about Clay and automations for another hour, I'm sure. But you've shared a ton of value today. And what I love best is you were really specific with your like mindset, but also strategies and tactics that are going to help people win. So thank you so much for your time. That was brilliant.
I appreciate you having me. And yeah, for anybody who's in staffing, right, the sales matters, the acumen matters, the mindset matters. Follow me on LinkedIn. I'm posting us on the road. I'm posting mistakes. I'm posting results and everything that we're learning. And Mark, thank you so much for having me. It was a true pleasure.
Yeah, we'll share your LinkedIn profile in the show notes, but definitely people should be following you. Your content's fantastic. I'm enjoying it myself. So look forward
appreciate
to the next time.
Much. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Take care. What was your biggest insight or takeaway from this interview? Let me know in the comments or shoot me a message on LinkedIn. Here are mine. First, stop judging our content just based on likes and comments. Mike explains why the people who matter most, the senior decision makers, often never engage publicly, but they are watching. Check who's viewing your content, not just who's reacting to it. Second, don't separate content from outbound. Blend them together. Mike described how sharing short LinkedIn videos inside emails and LinkedIn sequences turn cold outreach into warm follow-up, and why persistence over weeks rather than days is what actually books meetings. And finally, Mike made it clear that no tool replaces good sales skills. Automation works best when it's amplifying a salesperson who already knows how to sell. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss another episode, and I'll see you next time.